Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Join us for an in-depth look at Iowa agriculture. Here's your host, Brent Barnett.
Another week has come and gone, and we're happy to be back with you on another episode of Weekend Ag Matters. Russ Parker and Dustin Hoffman will both be joining us later in the program, but first, let's kick things off with a check of the latest ag headlines. The Biden EPA has missed the statutory deadline to release renewable volume obligations under the renewable fuel standard. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley tells farm reporters the November 30th deadline for the EPA to finalize RVOs for 2022 has passed, which is not good news for the ethanol industry.
There's a certain amount of certainty that comes from RVOs that states how much biofuels has to be mixed with petroleum products. So the fact that this deadline is being missed is very unfortunate for farmers and biofuel producers because they're facing uncertainty at the volume levels that have not even been proposed.
Several farm groups have expressed disappointment with the EPA for missing the deadline. Growth Energy tweeted that failing to issue RVOs on time is a missed opportunity to address the ongoing climate challenge. Grassley says President Joe Biden is to blame for the EPA's inability to set RVO levels by November 30th.
I think I would go where the buck stops at the Oval Office. The president campaigned on support for biofuels when he was campaigning in Iowa, maybe other states as well. And he's a green energy guy. Biofuels are much more environmentally positive than petroleum products. He should put his actions as president where his mouth was during the campaign.
All members of Iowa's congressional delegation took to Twitter on Tuesday in criticizing the EPA for missing the RVO statutory deadline. The National Pork Producers Council announced Brian Humphreys as the organization's new chief executive officer, effective December 21st, following the retirement of longtime leader Neil Dirks. NPPC President Jen Sorensen tells us that Humphreys is an Iowa native who brings years of experience in the pork industry.
You know, he got his start right out of college working on political campaigns and then actually joined the NPPC staff setting up our grassroots leader program and activating and deploying those so essential grassroots efforts on behalf of U.S. pork producers. He's a proven state executive leading the Ohio Pork Producers Association for a number of years, and more recently joined the National Pork Board as the Vice President of Producer, State, and Industry Relations. So he definitely is very understanding of the U.S. pork industry and has, you know, a clear plan and strategic vision on where we need to go.
Sorensen reflects on the legacy that Neil Dirks is leaving behind with his retirement.
What a tremendous leader we had in Neil Dirks. You know, we just can't, as producers, thank him enough for his over 30 years of service. You know, he is so intelligent. He's full of dignity, integrity, and grace, and really led us through such trying times, you know, over the past few decades. You just can't thank him enough for his service. He leaves a lasting legacy, and luckily, he will be around through this transition, advising Brian, advising the board, and making sure that we don't miss anything through this critical transition.
Humphreys hails from Columbus Junction, Iowa, where he grew up on his family farm. Today, he resides outside of Des Moines with his wife and son. The Iowa Cattlemen's Association will host its annual Iowa Cattle Leadership Summit in Altoona, December 15th and 16th. The summit will be held at Prairie Meadows Conference Center. Iowa Cattlemen's Association Communications Director Anna Hastert tells the network that there will be some great educational sessions and speakers at the event.
Retired U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Peter Shin will kick off the event with his presentation, Agriculture, Natural, and National Defense, Funding and Conflict Management. Peter is our keynote speaker, and then from there will be plenty of other opportunities for folks to be engaged in. One of those opportunities being our educational breakout sessions. Those will be on profiting from soil health and navigating the tax code. After that, we'll have some policy committee meetings, and producers are encouraged to attend one or all of them. They follow each other, so you have an opportunity to attend one or all.
For more information or to register for the event, log on to the Iowa Cattlemen's Association website. That'll do it for the headlines this week. We now join Russ Parker on Weekend Ag Matters.
Last Sunday was the first day of Advent. I, for one, thought, already? That means Christmas will be here soon. I have never struggled with the true meaning of Christmas, but I always struggle with the gift-giving part of Christmas, and I'm sure I'm not unique. I often marvel at my wife's process of gift-giving. She's got it mostly figured out. With a dozen-plus grandchildren, she starts making lists and communicates with their parents way in advance. However, all is not perfect, as I witnessed her spend hours trying to figure out which easel to buy online the other night. I, on the other hand, do not have it figured out. Every year, I get the proverbial answer from my mother, "I have everything I need," or my wife's answer with the classic, "Oh, I don't know." And you guessed it, I got both of these answers this year, one of the few things not impacted by COVID, apparently. Eventually, through pestering and some strategic observation, I've been able to get these two figured out, at least for a gift, but in the process, it made me pause. Giving and receiving gifts are at least experiential and contain interesting dynamics. Some gifts we give and receive evaporate in our memories in a few days, and others are remembered and cherished for a lifetime, both those given and received. In this time of Advent, we will celebrate a gift that is offered to all, and I'd invite those who need a gift during the Christmas season to put aside all the commercial hype and busyness that can take away our focus and spend some quality time focusing on the incredible blessing that we are being offered. This gift offers peace, joy, forgiveness, hope, and a promise for a glorious life beyond what we experience on earth. Once you've agreed to accept His gift, that's with a capital H, it will keep giving for a lifetime. Food for thought, I hope. This is Russ Parker. Have a blessed day.
That's it for segment one on this week's program. We'll join Dustin Hoffman when we return.
This is Money Minute. Tips from the experts at AgriFinancial. Thinking about a building project for 2022, AgriFinancial can make the financing of that project quick and easy. Joining me is Gene Charvel, Regional Sales Officer with AgriFinancial, that has a long-standing relationship with Morton Buildings. Gene, how does that long-term relationship help the customer?
We found some really unique solutions to providing financing for both some pretty small Morton projects to the very large. And we have some great lease and loan products that really can benefit our customers.
And now that customer can be of any size.
We are happy to deal and do a lot of business with large and medium-sized full-time farming operations, but our financing fits very well the small part-time farmer.
More on how AgriFinancial can work with small and part-time farmers in our next report. In the meantime, visit cgb-agfi.com. This has been Money Minute from AgriFinancial.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's your host, Dustin Hoffman.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. I'm Dustin Hoffman. Well, recently the team and I traveled to Kansas City for the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. During the trade talk portion of the convention, we had the chance to talk with all the movers and shakers and policymakers in the ag industry. And of course, the big buzzword is again this year, sustainability. And we talked about sustainability and the efforts being done in the dairy industry to help bring awareness and also to help grow sustainability practices. And we talked with the folks at Edge Dairy Cooperative about some of the partnerships they have with sustainability. Edge Dairy Cooperative serves parts of northeast Iowa, and there's dairy farmers there. So we caught up with Lee Kennard. Talking with the folks from Edge Dairy Farmers Cooperative, I'm with Lee Kennard. Lee, thanks for taking the time to visit with us today.
Yeah, great. Great for having me, Dustin. Thank you.
So we're talking about some work being done with Farmers for Sustainable Food. Lee, tell us about what's being done to kind of partner together.
Well, Farmers for Sustainable Food is a fairly new organization. We're about 7 years old with a rebranding here just in the last 2 years. But really what we're doing is we're a collaborative effort where we're tying those parties that are interested in sustainability, which is really everybody that produces food, together. So some pretty non-traditional partners. We're trying to go up the entire supply chain. So what I mean by that is we're including processors, we're including end users, retailers, farmers themselves, of course. And we've actually also reached out with the alliance, with the collaboration, to some kind of non-traditional groups that you wouldn't normally think of, but people who are very interested in sustainability and regenerative agriculture. And in our case, it's environmental groups, the Nature Conservancy, groups like that. So really, our founding was based upon, hey, we're all working on this together. And what we've really been most proud of, our biggest accomplishment to date, has been our statewide watershed groups, which are local watershed groups, farmer-led, supported by Farmers for Sustainable Food. So that's really what we've been up to in a clip note version.
When we talk about sustainability, we usually think about corn, soybeans, and growing. But when you think about working with the dairy industry, how does that come into play, that with sustainability?
Yeah, it actually adds a couple of really interesting components. You know, the cow is a pretty good tool to use when we are talking sustainability. We're actually able to use her excrement, her manure, as a really valuable resource. It really can help us when we look at things like net neutrality, carbon sequestration. Including that animal in is a really natural way to help us towards our goals on sustainability.
And then farther up the food chain, you mentioned the processors and stuff. How does that come into play? I mean, what are they doing to be able to make things better?
Well, obviously, there's a reason that they're talking to farmers. They're looking for things too, but they're fairly limited on the things that they can do. You know, processing, there's only so many things you can do to lower your footprint, to become more sustainable. So they're really looking at the farmer and saying, okay, hey, how do we work together to make this product better? That's why they've really become involved. You know, we've got a couple of milk sheds in Wisconsin where it's actually a watershed that coincides very nicely with where the milk for that processor is coming from. So we've had a couple of processors that have really gone whole hog into this. I mean, they've jumped in and said, okay, we're all about helping this watershed group really to prove some numbers. So there's some research that we've actually been doing. We've hired a Houston Engineering is a research firm we're working with, really setting up dynamics, basically starting off and saying, okay, where is the dairy industry? Where is agriculture? Putting that stake in the ground, and then using actual real-world data to say, okay, with these changes, what happens, if thens, and really measuring those changes then and quantifying that indeed this really has been the change we've made, which really, the processor is all about this because they're saying, hey, we can make far more, we can affect far more positive change environmentally, economically, socially on the farm side of things than we could ever hope to achieve on the processor side of things. So really that partnership has been really important on that one.
And on the agriculture side, obviously it comes down to cost and being able to make these changes. And sometimes it's not something you can just flip a switch on, on some of these operations. Are you seeing though more willingness from producers to kind of do the right thing, as it were?
Yeah, there is definitely a willingness. And I think there is, it's innate in farmers' nature. I think it's always been the kind of thing that when you take over the farm from the previous generation, your goal is to continuously improve that farm. Continuous improvement has been a really vague term. I mean, it's been hard to measure. So I think developing these metrics through an organization like Farmers for Sustainable Food has really been important. We can quantify the changes, that they are positive changes, and the net outcomes. I think the other thing that Farmers for Sustainable Food has been able to bring to the table is through the collaboration with the groups they have, they can offer some incentives, dollars and cents wise, to take some of the risk out of this. Because, yeah, to be sustainable, you have to be economically viable as well. I think the group has done a really good job of taking some of that risk out by offering these cost share programs.
All right, so if there's producers in Iowa that want to learn more about the Farmers for Sustainable Food programs, where do they find more information?
Yeah, you can actually go to the website, farmersforsustainablefood.com. Great resource. We've got a really large presence on the web, so that would be the great place to check us out.
All right, well, Lee, I thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Yeah, thank you, Dustin.
That, again, was Lee Kennard with Edge Dairy Cooperative here on Weekend Ag Matters. Coming up after this quick break, Brent Barnett will be back to wrap up the show. We'll see you right after these messages.
Hi, my name is Ethan Smith, and I've been a certified crop advisor in Iowa for about 6 years. The Iowa CCA program is valuable to me because it helps keep me informed on new topics and research around the industry, including soils, insects, diseases, and much more. It's also a great way to network with others around the state and beyond. Iowa is known for its crops, and that's why we're here. To learn more about becoming a certified crop advisor, visit iowacca.org.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's Brent Barnett.
Joining us today on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network is Iowa Congresswoman Ashley Hinson. Congresswoman, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. How are you doing today?
Doing okay. We're obviously out here in Washington, D.C., fighting a lot of chaos and hoping to fight back against some really destructive policies.
Before we get to all that, did you have a good Thanksgiving back home with family?
You know, I really did. I actually hosted this year, so broke out the cooking gear. I'm obviously traveling a lot, so it was fun to be home and cook for the whole family. And yeah, we had a nice time. I unplugged a little bit and then spent some time plugging in lots of Christmas lights. So that was the duty that I had on Sunday.
That's great. Well, we have a lot to get to about some recent legislation you've introduced regarding ethanol. Did want to ask as we start about the Environmental Protection Agency missing the November 30th deadline to set the RVO levels for 2022. Now, Congresswoman, what was your reaction to this news this week when it came out that EPA failed to set these levels?
First and foremost, the EPA needs to follow the law. They need to stick to these deadlines. And when it comes to maintaining the integrity of the renewable fuel standard, these deadlines exist for a reason. It is to provide that much needed certainty for our market. And the fact that they have just plain old disregarded this timetable, it's incredibly harmful to our Iowa producers more and more each passing day. And that uncertainty is exactly why we're trying to take some action to preemptively hold them accountable and try to put a spotlight on what they're doing at the EPA.
Yeah, can you talk more about what this uncertainty does for both biofuel producers and farmers in Iowa?
When you talk about making business investments or long-term planning decisions, that uncertainty about what could possibly be even retroactively done, not even talking about those levels for the future, but it's incredibly stressful on our producers. They need certainty, and they're in a precarious position at a time when, obviously, in our economy, there are so many other challenges. And so that's why we've introduced Defend the Blend. It's a really important bill to stand up against the EPA. We've heard rumors circulating here in Washington, D.C., obviously, that the EPA would even retroactively reduce the biofuel blending requirements for 2020, which just is a bonkers proposal in my mind. When you think about retroactive cuts to blending requirements, we should be leaning into the industry right now to lower gas and energy prices, not the other way around. So that's why Defend the Blend exists. It's a bipartisan bill that I am the lead Republican on. We have 14 co-sponsors as of today that are standing up for our producers and against these destructive positions coming out of the EPA.
Sure. So again, it's the Defend the Blend Act that you've introduced here. It's supported by, I know, the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association and many other key farm groups. Can you talk a little bit more, Congresswoman, about what led you to bring this legislation forward?
it's plain and simple. The EPA, even posturing that they could possibly make these changes, made it very clear to us that we needed to be very clear that that is unacceptable. President Biden came to Iowa to promise to stand up for our renewable fuels industry. And it's his EPA, obviously, in this circumstance that's posturing the other way. And so we need to make sure that he's accountable. And again, this is to go to help our producers. Our ag industry feeds and fuels the world, but they are facing mounting challenges and a lot of uncertainty right now. And so we need to be clear that we stand behind them and we understand the challenges they're facing. And we want to make sure that the EPA sticks to its important deadlines. We need those 22 renewable volume obligation requirements to be met and announced. And again, that's about certainty. It's about making sure that they have a good timetable and stick to it and are consistent in doing so.
Now, we've had several days go by now since you've introduced the bill. During that time, have you had any feedback from those in the industry about it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the industry, as you mentioned, several industry groups have come out in support of this legislation because they understand, like we do, it's really about that certainty. And so I'm hopeful that, number one, this sends a very clear signal to the EPA, but also long-term, you know, when I look at the Biofuels Caucus members out here in Washington, D.C., this is a bipartisan issue, obviously, and it's an area where in a very polarized time in our country, we can work together. And so this is something that I'm excited about. I know these groups are excited about as well. And, you know, when I'm talking to farmers in rural Iowa, they're excited about it too.
And I've got to ask, what kind of a path forward do you feel this legislation has in the House?
Well, right now, I think mostly we're unfortunately focused on government funding here. You know, there's been a lot of hangups, I guess you'd call it, in the process. So I'm hopeful we'll continue to build support for this bill over the next few weeks as we head toward the end of the year. But certainly what this has done is signaled to the administration. You have a bipartisan coalition of people who are very closely watching what the EPA is doing. And so continuing to build support, but I think it's very promising when you look at the co-sponsors on this bill. For instance, your entire Iowa delegation is on the bill together, Republicans and Democrats. So this is an issue that is a bipartisan issue, and I am proud to lead on that in Iowa.
Now, in the meantime, is there anything farmers can do throughout the process to try to help? I mean, should they be reaching out to their representatives about their support for the RFS?
Yeah, absolutely. Share your stories about, you know, I talk about the uncertainty and what this retroactive change could do for the blending requirements. What would that do to your business model? We need to hear those stories. Those are the conversations that I'm having not only with, you know, Iowa Corn and the Renewable Fuels Association, but I'm hearing it from people at my town halls as well. And when I talk with people out in the district. So that's exactly the kind of feedback that we as policymakers need. So that, again, we can help spotlight what these policies would do. If they are policies that help support people, we need to hear what they would do to help support them. But if they are destructive, as I mentioned, it's our job to push back against destructive policies that are not right for Iowa. But we'll continue to try to find common ground as many places as we possibly can.
Again, it's the Defend the Blend Act, and our guest is Iowa Congresswoman Ashley Hinson. Congresswoman, shifting gears just a bit, we did see that you recently signed on to a letter to President Biden regarding Mexico and some biotech provisions laid out in the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. Now, what exactly does this letter highlight, and what are you seeking from the president?
Well, as we all know, I just obviously talked about the importance of Iowa's corn producers, and one of Iowa's biggest export markets for corn is to Mexico. And when you look at some of the recent actions by the Mexican government, that could jeopardize our farmers' access to this absolutely key export market. And as we know, Iowa farmers can use biotech to help increase their outputs and also at the same time reduce overall carbon emissions and food waste at the same time. And so under USMCA, Mexico agreed to maintain a transparent and an efficient regulatory framework for accepting our ag biotech products like Iowa corn. So now if they're saying, hey, wait a second, we might renege on that deal, we might reject the imports, that backtracking to me is frankly unacceptable. And so that's why we sent the letter to President Biden urging him to hold Mexico accountable for its commitments under USMCA. Mexico must stay true to their word. As I mentioned, these provisions that were agreed to as part of USMCA must be adhered to and they must be enforced. And it's up to this administration to hold them accountable.
Do you feel that the USMCA agreement has been beneficial since it was enacted?
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at our number one and number two trading partners, it's Canada and Mexico. And I think that that's a great opportunity for Iowa producers to get their products to market and open up new opportunities. I think there's always still work to do, and I do think it's a good deal, but it's only a good deal if everyone's willing to maintain their part of the deal and stay true to their word. So, again, it's about holding them accountable for the backtracking so that our commitments that our Iowa farmers are relying on are held up to and their end of the deal is held up to.
Well, Congresswoman, we've run out of time. How can our listeners stay up to date on the latest work from your office?
Well, I think the best way is to go to our website, hinson.house.gov, and subscribe to our newsletter. We send that out every week with updates on what's happening here in Washington and also the work we're doing back home in the district as I travel through all 20 counties.
Well, thanks again for taking the time to come on our program. Stay safe, and we hope to catch up again down the line.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Brent, for having me.
Again, that's Iowa Congresswoman Ashley Hinson here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Thanks again for joining us on our latest episode of Weekend Ag Matters. You can always catch replays of this program at our website, iowaagnet.com. For Dustin Hoffman and Russ Parker, I'm Brent Barnett, and we look forward to chatting with you again next week on Weekend Ag Matters.